everybody. Welcome back to a very special episode. This time, we have an interview live from MagicCon Las Vegas with principal game designer Annie Sardellis, senior narrative designer Nick Markenthal, and senior executive producer Mike Tyrion, all from Wizards of the Coast and the folks who brought us the long-awaited Hobbit set. We go in deep on how the team adapted one of J.R.R. Tolkien's most accessible reads, especially for younger audiences, and what it means to step into Tolkien's legacy. Here you go.
So my very first question is, so I have a really killer AoN deck, and one of my favorite cards in there is a saga called There and Back Again.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, how did you all approach elements like There and Back Again, which clearly signal the Hobbit from the Tales of Middle-earth set, and make sure that you both maintain uniqueness within the Hobbit set, and not kind of override those elements from the Tales of Middle-earth set?
So to clarify the question, is this sort of like, hey, here are the, like Bilbo, right?
Yes, oh, like, yeah, yes.
Right? Bilbo has, you know, a different perspective and he has a different story. And so like, how did we
How did you navigate
those
pieces?
I was just looking up the exact card just in case.
Yeah, I when I got up in the Q&A, it was to go look at my AoN deck to make sure that I was not hallucinating. Yeah.
Right. I think one thing that was really exciting was the fact that you do get to go. I mean, it was one of the things that I loved that we did in the Lord of the Rings too. Was hey, we will show Gandalf early, and we will show Gandalf the White, Gandalf the Grey. And so, like, even in that, we're already navigating exactly what you're talking about, because, right, it's like, oh, how do these Gandalfs both sit in a unique space gameplay-wise, but also sit in a space that represents them as a character? So I think right now, like, looking at what we've done with the Lord of the Rings set sort of gives you a good guide as to what the team tapped into for the Hobbit.
Yeah, even specifically for that card, I think I remember now. I mean, it's like a 6/6 flying dragon, something,
treasure ball.
Thanks, Smaug.
I was like, maybe I should start with, like, that ability and stat line for, like, one of the Smaugs or something like that. So there was a lot of looking back, a lot of, like, starting there and seeing where it took us, so.
That was certainly, like, our foundation. When, you know, we were working on the set was, okay, what did we do there? What did we need to accomplish making this set? Did we hit on some of the same notes? Did we just kind of do our own thing? We already made the There and Back Again card. You know, did we, like, what are we doing? So we certainly knew everything that we made going into LTR. And, again, just wanted to keep expanding and building the world as much as we can. So, like, okay, we made those cards. How do we just add to what we've already made? And you'll see some of the, like, handshakes. You've seen some of the box toppers that we made for The Hobbit. Like, we are also doing throw forwards back to Lord of the Rings as well. Like, these two sets definitely complement each other.
One of the things that I really loved in Lord of the Rings were taking characters who are beloved, like Eowyn, and fleshing her out and giving her three versions. She's a knight, she's a shield bearer, and she's also a queen. But she also doesn't have a lot of context within Lord of the Rings, and you alluded it to earlier in our Q&A about kind of bringing forward like female dwarves. And this doesn't necessarily have to be women characters. It's just there are a lot of side characters in Lord of the Rings that people love, and the appendices give some... a little bit about, a little extra. So how did you all approach kind of taking those beloved aspects that we don't have much information from and making sure that it both adheres to Tolkien's work and legacy, but also fleshes them out for fans? Sorry, that was a very long question.
One of the cool things about our game is that we make so many cards, and there's a card and a character for everyone. There are so many opportunities for us to, like, elevate characters who maybe didn't have a whole lot of time to spotlight in the story, but they still get a card here, right? They are still part of the story. We want to see them. They should be here. We know how much, again, like, people love all of these characters, and we're trying to bring a full vision, a full image of the story to life. We love doing some deep cuts too, right?
Yeah.
every now and then, right? So that stuff is very much on our mind when we were making the set. We knew our big, huge characters that we absolutely had to get in here, but we also looked for some fun things. It just I guess in between the passages and things like that. Yeah. So, yeah, we were very conscious about that.
I think the toughest thing was there's a lot of dwarves.
Yes.
And a lot of them. Right. And it's like, what do we know about Ori? It's like, he's the brother of Nori and Dori. And I'm like, what else do we know? And it's like,
name rhymes.
It's like, once he started a fire in this one scene, and it's like, it really is sparse. So, like, you know, being able to use, you know, not just what's in the text, but, like, being able to take, you know, their cards and make them complement one another or make them, like, kind of synergize or something. Like, that kind of helps flesh them out as much as we can.
It was like Mike was talking about earlier, too. Like, we know female dwarves are there.
Yeah.
They don't get a whole lot of time in the story, but it's something that we can potentially highlight here. Yeah. And so that was something that was really fun for us to do, was kind of explore, okay, what does that look like? How can we elevate it and just lift that up and make that rise here in the setting.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll pull some examples from the Lord of the Rings set where I remember talking with Blake about, you know, just the Lord of the Rings, and he's like, is there a Tom Bombadil? Like, right? And so that, like, hey, here, right? Like, to me, that's a character that really represents this of, right? Okay, here it is. It's people's favorites and beloved, right? I think we did it with Shadowfax.
Yeah.
Right? And so, right? Shadowfax. And so, right? It's like, hey, what are the opportunities? What are the moments? How can we build off of shows us the meaning of haste, mm-hmm. right? And turn that into, so it's not just another horse in magic, right? But it is, in fact, Shadowfax.
Yeah.
So, that's the type of things we look into.
While elements of the color pie between everything are the same, I think elves, blue-green. Mm-hmm. The way the elves act in The Hobbit is very different than the place the elves have in Lord of the Rings in terms of how they're relating to our dwarves, Bilbo, and everything else. How did you approach those personality differences that we see from the from Legolas's very beautiful father and everyone else? Because I think that there is an expectation for what an elf is, and I think Lord of the Rings kind of colors that. But when you go back into The Hobbit, they're not that nice.
Yeah, for sure.
At all.
It's something that we certainly kept in mind. We knew going into it.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, the party does go to Rivendell.
Okay.
They do see Elrond. So we do have some green-blue nature to the elves. But we did have to ask ourselves, okay, how are the elves represented in Thranduil's Elven mm-hmm. Kingdom? How are they represented in Mirkwood, right?
Yeah.
Those were certainly conversations that we had. It was a two-part flavor-forward thing. Mm-hmm. Does this feel right for what we're doing for the elves? And then also a mechanical gameplay need as well. Because we did want this to hook into LTR.
Yeah.
We mm-hmm. did want our elves to play together. A lot of spinning plates that we kept in mind, but it, like, getting the color identities right was certainly something that we talked about.
There's definitely a certain character dabbling in a third color, maybe because of his attitude,
but I
don't want to reveal too much too early.
Yeah.
And green does quite a bit of scrapping too.
Green, pretty monstrous.
One of the things that I love asking people when they've worked on IP. Is specifically not just the fans that you're honoring, but the fans that you're creating too.
Yes.
And I think that the fact that we have a lot of younger folks now who, to be very honest, if you look at studies, like a lot of people aren't reading as much as they used to. And with The Hobbit coming in this form, that is a very accessible game, a game that is taking off, and that so many people know and love, there is a chance for you all to introduce The Hobbit to new audiences and build new Tolkien fans from your work. How does it feel to both carry that responsibility but also contribute to this type of legacy?
One of the hardest things about making this set was knowing all of that.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like it was huge. We really wanted to do this right. We are all a huge fan of Tolkien's work. We know what the story means to everyone. It means a lot to us personally. And again, kind of like you said, there are always new players coming in, always new younger generations who are mm-hmm. finding Tolkien's work or finding new fantasy literature books to really sink their teeth into. So, you know, hopefully in this modern day era, things are very visual, right?
Yeah.
We can capture the imagination of younger audiences who maybe aren't familiar with Tolkien's work and then go and seek that out from here. Like, we definitely want to shake hands with both the literacy world and our player base as well. Like, it's huge for us. So.
Yeah, I think for me, right, it's like, of course, we went and looked and saw just how popular The Hobbit is,
yeah,
right? And because it is, you know, a little bit more, a little younger of an audience, it's more well-read than the Lord of the Rings novel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, already, right? Like, you have that responsibility of, hey, we are going to represent something that people have known and loved and just tap into that, like, oh, the reason I got into the Lord of the Rings was because my dad and I read The Hobbit together, and then I read it, and so, yeah, so that's something that we keenly feel. I think one of the things that also just, like, to me, Universes Beyond for Magic represents reach of, hey, oh, a fan, like, oh, my friend is, I knew they were a big fan of, you know, this world. Great, let me extend the, oh, hey, come and play, and you know, maybe I tried to teach you magic years ago. It's another opportunity. Yeah. And also that goes in reverse, right? Like, we've seen people who are like, oh, I started playing Final Fantasy or Warhammer because I loved the magic set, and so now I'm going to go and, you know, read the Lord of the Rings novel, go read The Hobbit, I expect, because they're just like, oh, like, I read this flavor text, or I wanted to get this reference, like, what's going on? I want to learn more. So in a lot of ways, I mean, magic, of course, encourages reading, because you're going to read the card, yeah, and has the flavor text itself, so therefore, I think it appeals to an audience who wants to read. So a lot of times you just need that inspiration of, yeah, I'm going to put down my phone and open up a book.
Yeah, my two cents are, like, you know, literature class growing up in grade school, it's not for everyone. Sometimes it's just sort of like, can I just watch Pride and Prejudice instead of reading it? But I think, like, what's even more powerful than that is games, because I love games. I'm a gamer. So, like, if this game existed when I had to read The Hobbit, I might have liked it more. Yeah. But now, so that's all.
It's really, hearing you all talk about it, it's one of the reasons why I came into the set when I did. Came into Magic when I did, which was with Lord of the Rings. And it is one of the really beautiful things that I think Lord of the Rings gives to all fantasy properties, and obviously Wizards of the Coast in general with Dungeons & Dragons and all of the other things we do see in Magic, is that it is using this, Tolkien is a foundational text for everything that we see. He's a grandfather of fantasy.
Yeah.
So how does it feel to kind of, I don't want to say circle back, but kind of pay homage to what is the foundation of everything that we see right now, and a lot of what Wizards has done and succeeded at?
I mean, for me, I feel a lot of pride and joy, like, just right. I mean, to me, I said to Whitney Williams, who runs the events team, I was like, I don't know if I will, when I worked on the Lord of the Rings, it's like, I don't know if I will ever work on something like so cool and so awesome and so meaningful, like, ever again in my life, which is both, like, awesome and terrifying at the same time, right? And fortunately, like, we were able to come back and then bring The Hobbit to life, right? And Magic has a lot of exciting upcoming partners and opportunities. But to me, that just kind of captures that feel of both responsibility, but then also just, like, the pride and joy of, like, oh, wow, look what we have brought to life for the world to, you know, forever more enjoy. And look, like, even if it's just looking at the beautiful art, right? Like, that is something that wouldn't have existed without, you know, all of our work and all the team's work.
Yeah. So my next question is going to be a doozy, because I love asking it.
Oh, wow.
I ask this to everybody I interview.
Okay.
I believe that we put so much of ourselves when we work on something. We just put all of us into it. But it also teaches us something about ourselves as well. And for me, I reread Lord of the Rings every single year.
Wow.
I rewatch the movies every single year. And how I look at it now, I'm learning about myself just when I'm engaging with Tolkien's work. So I wanted to ask what you all have learned about yourselves through adapting Tolkien and through working on this set.
Wow, this is a deep... You were like, it's a doozy.
No, okay. I'll go because something I thought because like I said, like I didn't like reading The Hobbit when I was a kid, and so when I got to read it a couple times to work on it, the thing I just appreciated was like how just much fun Tolkien seems to be having when he's writing some of these details. I'm like, what are you going on about? You're just listing more dwarves to make my job harder. or just making up songs and rhymes. I'm like, I don't know how to put those on a magic card. But it's just sort of to have fun with your job. I know, like, I don't know how much of a job writing a novel feels like. Probably some. But, just, like, have fun with it. Someone will enjoy it. And
The story is really fun. And, like, I know that we had a lot of fun making the set, right? Like, just kind of leaning into that.
Yeah, it's just so tough to, like, put pen to paper sometimes. Even, with design, it's just sort of like, oh, am I writing the right thing? It's just, just let it go, let it flow. Like, see if it's something someone likes, you know?
I think for me, reading this novel, then working on the set, this being the first time I was a set lead on anything, was a little bit of, like, overcoming the odds. Especially coming after the legacy of Tales of Middle-earth as well, and, like, everything that meant. For me, it was just, I think, learning about, this whole process of bringing these things to life and adaptation through the lens of Magic the Gathering. And being someone now in this position to be a set lead and to kind of steer the ship. There was a lot of learning that I had to do about myself that was, very familiar to Thorin and Company's adventures.
Yeah.
Slaying the dragon, right? And going to the Lonely Mountain. That was like, I'm like right there with them.
Did you get put in a barrel?
No barrels.
Yeah.
Spiders, though?
Yeah. Lots of spiders in the TNW.
That's true, actually.
It's still, I guess to me, you really feel how much of an expert, he was.
Yeah.
Like, when you read it, you're like, oh yeah, this is an English professor writing this. But not only that, it's like that this is his life's work, right? And so like just like the craft, the detail, like the the artistry, right? Mm-hmm. Is like the innovation, right? Yeah. Just you see all that. And so I guess to me, like looking back, it's like, oh yeah, like I've spent my life mastering games and product design, and right, like I started working at Wizards in 2004, so this is I think I'm on year 22.
Yeah.
Right. But for him, it's like he was still going and just trying to get these published, and so I think not that I had reflected on it before, right? But reflecting on that, like I see a lot of similarities and. Both in my journey and then also in the results of like, hey, like one thing that we had as a big advantage is we have so many people working on it and creating this, right? And so we get to like just that to amplify. All right, great. Everybody gets to be a subject matter expert in their field, and hopefully we will live up to the work of one person.
Yeah.
Together, I think that's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
Last question is really about the small details. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that Tolkien was very good at. Mm-hmm. Those little small things where he could have pride in creating a whole new language and pride in describing the Ents in two pages. And I think that while we see the big show-stopping things, like the box toppers, the headliner cards, all of these elements, I also think that there are smaller pieces of magic cards that stick out, at least as players, and I'm sure as designers and people who are working on this and creating these. What is just like one small detail that like means a lot to you, but may go unseen, maybe people won't see it yet, or just kind of hit you home without being a giant reveal. If that makes sense.
I'll go first. I guess both by your expressions, I'm like you are both
digging.
First.
Yeah.
To me, the fact that we did the seasonal Hobbit lands. Right, and right, as they both know, my love and passion for them. So we're only doing those on the plains, right? Yeah. Like, So, right, so often when we do full art things, it's like, oh, what does the island look like? What does the swamp, you know, like we do it in a full cycle. It's like here, it's like we are just going to show you this moment, this scene, four times over as, you know, the reflection of basically that was Bilbo's life, right? Like his life is just, yep, here it is. I'm passing through the seasons. This is my place in the world. And so like the fact that we got to bring that to life and show it and just really capture, I'll say, the serenity of his world. And it was amazing. So I'm really glad that we did that. And it's part of how come like we put it in the pre-release. Yeah. I put it in the pre-release kit also because like to me it is the opening moment.
Yeah.
Right, and so I wanted to make sure that like people their first interaction with the Hobbit was just seeing what the world was through that same lens.
Yeah, this isn't really a specific detail, but with the scope of making full booster sets out of a UV thing, like you got to think about so much more than just those headliner things. It's just the Bilbos and the Smogs and the Thorins. It's just like, all right, so what goes on this common? You know what I mean? And then just making sure like that thing is evocative, resonant. Like, ooh, maybe we can actually dig around and go find flavor text that directly references it and stuff like that. And that is, you know, like 90% of the task, honestly, because it's most of the cards. And so just trying to make sure everything has, I don't know, everything can just sort of make someone go like, yeah, that feels right. You know, I really like getting to do that, even on commons.
Yeah. I know, like, the way that I think about cards is, like, they are windows into the world, basically. Yeah. I know this is, like, dramatic and ambitious, whatever, but, like, every card should tell some kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we just have a lot of fun packing as much of that as we can into every single card, working with design on just, you know, creative goals and mechanical goals. How do the two meet? How do they meld? How can we come together to make this kind of story on a card-by-card basis is always super fun and exciting. It's like a huge part of our collaboration. I think for me, we worked so hard on Smog, like specifically, because there have been so many just larger-than-life fantasy dragons. How do we make Smog stand apart? Like, how do we make him what he is. We paid like huge detail to all the small little things that went into Tolkien's descriptions of him.
Yeah.
That includes like his green flames. You'll see like a little hint of that green whenever Smog's breathing fire. And then so it was little things like that and his gold chest. That was one of the elements that we knew we had to get right. We had to make him stand apart from everyone else.
Yeah, I'll add on to this because that made me think of another really small detail. Yeah. So we always do like the booster fund frames.
Yeah.
Oh, right? I was going to bring this up.
No,
you got it. Really?
Yeah. So in the booster fund frame, the booster fund frames, like the you see the dragons. Like if you look at the blue frame, the white frame, like there's the dragon scale, right? But for the red frame only, there is a scale missing from that frame.
Yeah.
Right to hit on exactly that, right? And so,
it's little things we seriously care a lot about.
I saw one person, and to me, like, you just look at it, and right, like, it came up, and of course, yesterday, everybody is focused on the card and the mechanic and the art, right? But like, when you do look, it's just like, oh, yep, here it is, here's a nod to a moment, to a reference that, That's just really cool.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.